Good morning and welcome to Local Matters Health Matters, where we spotlight key health issues and community concerns across the Upper Cumberland. Today we're focusing on hospice and palliative care, areas of healthcare that are often misunderstood, but deeply important in supporting patients and families facing serious illness. Hospice of Tennessee provides compassionate care across our region, ensuring dignity, comfort, and support for both patients and their loved ones. Joining us today are Tracy Daly and Dr. Kirk Gilbert from Hospice of Tennessee. They're here to help us understand hospice care, address common misconceptions, and share advice for families in our community.
Tracy, Dr. Gilbert, thank you so much for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
Glad to be here.
We're going to start with Tracy. All right. Can you share a little bit about your background and your role with Hospice of Tennessee?
Yes, I function as the clinical liaison.
Okay.
So my job is to go meet patients and families wherever they are, where they call home or in the hospital setting, and transition them home and make that a smooth transition.
Okay. To hospice.
Yes.
All right. Dr. Gilbert, what about your background?
Yes. So I am an internal medicine physician with over 11 years of experience. And then at Hospice of Tennessee, I serve as the medical director. And I partner with our team, which includes nurses, social workers, chaplains, and aides to manage symptoms, guide complex decisions, and keep care aligned with what matters to each patient.
Very good. I like how you did the interprofessional list there. I appreciate that. So what led you, Dr. Gilbert, to pursue, I know you said internal medicine, but what caused you to pursue hospice and palliative care? That's not a normal, choice early in your career to kind of go that route. So what made you?
Yeah, no, good question. So during my training, I just realized that I had a passion and was very interested in helping patients really in one of the most, what I feel like is one of the most important times of their lives.
Yeah.
To be able to transition and focus more on quality versus, potentially like quantity.
Quantity. No, I totally agree.
And, I just recognize how powerful it is when medicine not only treats disease, but also honors dignity, comfort, and family connection. Because really, I feel like that's why we're all here, at the end of the day. So, yeah, I was just drawn to that combination of being able to make connections with families, but then also to use the clinical skills that I've learned and gained to help with that.
So. Nice. Tracy, how about you? What led you specifically to hospice?
I've been in hospice and palliative care for 30 years. So I was on the operations side initially and then transitioned over to business development. And I just enjoy the families. It's a really tough time for them.
Yeah.
They're overwhelmed, and it's nice for them to have somebody they can call to help them make that decision that's a tough one.
So with that being said, with the Hospice of Tennessee, what types of patients do you serve?
We serve patients with cancer, mm-hmm. COPD, mm-hmm. congestive heart failure, ALS, MS, mm-hmm. Dementia, did I mention that one?
No, you didn't. Dementia. But you said Alzheimer's, but no,
yes.
I think of it as different, yeah. So what services?
We have skilled nursing. We have aid services that are ancillary to the nurse. We have social work, chaplain, volunteer services. They're provided with the oversight from our medical director.
Mm-hmm.
We provide them with durable medical equipment.
Okay.
That are needed to manage the symptoms and the diseases. We provide them with supplies. So if someone has a catheter, we would, provide them with the supplies. And wound care supplies, things like that. And just, it's an individualized plan of care for every patient.
Yeah, that's good. How can listeners contact you guys?
We're located at 155 East Spring Street. Our phone number is 931-651-2722.
Dr. Gilbert?
Well, I was going to add to the last question.
No, please go right ahead. This is not formal at all.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. So basically, we also, I like to think of it as when a patient or when someone comes on to our services, is that I and we, as in our nurses and
your
myself,
team,
we take over as kind of like their main caregiver, so like their primary caregiver. So in addition to everything that, that Tracy said, we also comprehensive medication management.
Okay.
And oftentimes we, you know, we do continue to treat for, I mean, we will we'll have a discussion and continue their chronic medications that they've been on for quite some time. And if something were to pop up, like a sinus infection, influenza, COVID, urinary tract infection, things like that, we treat
very
those.
Common things that come up.
You know, I guess I don't know, we talk about misconceptions later, but that's a big misconception. But no, we still actively treat infections and things like that. And we can even do other services. Oftentimes we can get lab work. We can do x-rays, mobile x-rays, things like that.
Yeah, I think that'll be definitely in the myths and truths I like to do in the next segment on, you know, what really encompasses hospice care or palliative care. And is there a difference? Yeah, absolutely. So then what do you both find very meaningful about working and supporting patients at this important stage of their life? What's the most meaningful thing for you, Tracy?
I think the most meaningful thing for me is being their support system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And seeing that, you know, you only get a chance to do hospice right once.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
I think, you know, being that support person, making sure they have what they need and basically holding their hand. And that's from the moment the referral comes in until the admission assessment is completed and Dr. Gilbert has given the orders to admit.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Admit. And we'll talk about that. So inpatient, outpatient, you mentioned, Dr. Gilbert, you want to talk about that? The difference between the services that you guys provide?
So we're mostly outpatient. We meet the patient where they live. That's in an assisted living facility, whether that's in a skilled nursing facility, things like that. However, we are able to utilize inpatient services whenever symptoms may be too much or may require additional intensive treatment, monitoring, things like that.
Yeah.
So typically short hospital stays, things like that is something we can
and all
do
that's
well.
Very individualized.
Yes. No, it's all very individualized. It's a decision that the patient, number one,
good.
The family, the staff, and myself all make together.
Yes.
And here at Cookeville Regional, I'm actually able to continue to follow that patient.
Oh.
While they are admit them. So you have hospital privileges. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I would admit
inpatient.
Them to the hospital.
Yeah.
And so it's continuity of care. So
that is unusual nowadays.
Yeah.
So for listeners that may not understand that concept, you know, most of the time you have a doctor that you see outside of the hospital who's your primary care. And then in the hospital, you see a specialized doctor that's a hospitalist. So Dr. Gilbert's saying that he does both. He does that continuity of care from the outpatient to the inpatient, which is rare.
And I actually am a hospitalist as well.
There you are.
Trained as a hospitalist.
Oh, okay. You have many hats. Mm-hmm. Many hats. I like it. No, it's a good thing.
I need to hear what was most meaningful to him as
I
well.
Do too. That's next.
Gotcha.
Give it.
So really it's about I'm helping the patient and family regain control of what matters most to them in their life. Because I know I've seen it. I've seen where patients, whether they have a cancer diagnosis or heart failure diagnosis, and sometimes it just feels out of control, chemotherapy, more of this, go to this doctor, do this medicine. And I think that at this stage, when you reach a certain stage and when your symptoms kind of settle, and, you know, the family and the patient will have a clear plan that's when we can focus more on just what matters the most at that time and, you know, for the rest of it.
And you fill that gap. And
yes,
you fill
we do.
It, that in. And you listen. Sounds like both of you, I'm hearing, listen to what the families and the patient want.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do your best to fulfill that for quality of care.
And it looks different for every patient.
It does. Because
it has to be what they need.
Yeah. That could be difficult, I would think, at some times, making sure that individualized care happens the same way, you know, in a different, not the same way, but whatever they want, whatever that patient wants.
Whatever is important to them.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So a lot of people are really unsure about really what hospice is. And we've got a couple of minutes left. So could either of you or both together kind of explain for someone who's unfamiliar, what is hospice really?
When you elect your hospice Medicare benefit, that's saying that you're no longer seeking aggressive treatment.
Okay.
that you have, usually 6 months or less. Now, we have patients that live on hospice for much longer than that,
okay.
and gratefully so.
Okay.
We want them to have every good day they can have. But hospice is covered 100% by Medicare, and it's designed as an entire plan of care with the individualized team, the doctor, the nurse, you know, they have a team,
right.
and provide the care they need in the home setting or in a skilled nursing facility, wherever they call home.
Wherever there's home. Okay.
I like to think of more of kind of hospice overall as more of a mindset shift to where the care that you're seeking or as a patient is no longer focused on curative care. It's focused mm-hmm. more on comfort care and maintaining dignity.
Yeah.
For what time we have left. So.
Yeah. So I think that's what.
Is there a difference though with palliative care? Is that okay?
But there is a difference.
Okay.
Palliative is billed under Medicare Part B, and mm-hmm. hospice is billed under Medicare Part A. And palliative care, they can be continuing treatments,
okay.
seeking aggressive care. So let's say they have a cancer diagnosis,
yeah.
they're getting chemotherapy. We're going to manage their symptoms while they're doing that.
Or like dialysis. Like,
yes.
You know, can still continue
that's
to
true.
Pursue.
Mm-hmm. End stage. Yeah.
And still see their primary care provider,
yes.
and they can still see their specialist. They can go to the cardiologist, that sort of thing on palliative care. So typically palliative care would come earlier in the whole spectrum.
Usually it's 2 years.
Okay.
Where hospice is about six months.
The 6 months.
Yeah.
Okay. Expectation.
Okay. Good. That's a good explanation
mm-hmm.
of the differences of those two. And I know you've mentioned Medicare only. What if someone is not of Medicare age?
We do commercial insurance as well.
Okay.
So it's Medicare, Medicaid, or commercial insurance.
Okay. That's good. That's good information to know as well. All right. We'll come back in the next segment with some more palliative and hospice care awareness. We're joined today by Tracy Daly and Dr. Kirk Gilbert from Hospice of Tennessee on Local Matters Health Matters, and we're talking about hospice and palliative care awareness. So I want to talk a little bit about some misconceptions. So you got two or three common misconceptions, most common, that you would say about hospice care. What do you hear the most?
Yes. So one of the most common ones is basically that hospice means that you're giving up. But in reality, it's really just choosing a different type of care that aims toward comfort,
okay.
dignity, and time at home, as we spoke about previously. Another big one is that hospice is only for the last few days of your life or the last week or two of your life, where many patients receive hospice for months.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, the earlier that we are able to start caring for that patient, the more meaningful the care that we deliver can be. And it's just overall...
Yeah.
Better outcome, the sooner that we're able to really start helping out.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one is I know morphine, everyone, it's kind of like a sticking point, you know, like morphine drips and things like that. But one of the big misconceptions is that morphine actually hastens death. But when used correctly, which we do use it correctly,
mm-hmm.
It's a great medication to improve and relieve breathlessness and pain. And it can actually improve patients' alertness and quality of life if they're not having those symptoms burden so much, or that symptom burden.
So. Yeah. So are you seeing, going back to your second misconception, do you think that you see that there is better awareness now? Are people accepting services earlier, or are we still not as aware as we should be?
We're still in the cave ages.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, how many times we meet every, I'm in constant communication with our staff, and I'm actually on call 24/7, but we meet every 2 weeks to talk about our patient census. And so many times, I kid you not, in that session, we'll be like, "Oh, I wish we could have had this patient for even like a week earlier. I wish we could have had this patient for several weeks earlier, because I feel like we really could have made it just
mm-hmm.
better for everybody involved, including family members, patients, caregivers, everybody."
So
that's what we hear a lot is, "I wish we would have done it."
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm. So I know this is kind of off the script there, but how can we help people get there quicker? I mean, what do you think? How are we going to raise awareness?
Besides this.
Well, I was going to say,
besides this.
Like this.
Yeah.
Early intervention.
Yeah.
Physician buy-in.
Yeah. That's a big one.
And community education.
Yeah.
Which we're working on the community education piece. I know Tracy can speak more to this. We do several things, right? Like
We do. We're involved at the Senior Expo, which is coming up in October.
Yeah.
So we're involved in that.
Well, the Hospital Foundation and Tennessee Tech are partnering on a joint function. I don't have the correct or the exact date in my mind. Sometime this fall, I believe.
Yes, it is this fall. End of October, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So getting the information out there and making sure that everyone is aware of the services, which is what we're doing today, but I think that's a huge piece of it.
I
do too.
Yeah.
The physician buy-in.
Yeah.
And then the aggressive treatment part.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times patients will go in and they really want to be treated. They want to give it a try, and that's all fine and good. Hospice is not to take away anyone's hope, but I think that time they spend doing all these interventions wanting an opposite outcome, that's time they're not getting the benefit of hospice as well.
True. But like you said, they could be getting palliative care,
they
and
could.
Then you could transition, right, from
Absolutely.
Palliative to
yes.
hospice.
And that may be where the awareness needs to come in, too. The, you know, one is, you said it really well about hospice, you're not curing, you're continuing care to make them comfortable, whereas palliative care, they can still get treatments.
Exactly right.
They can seek aggressive treatment and get symptom management for that whatever disease process they're
and
going through.
I think the general public does not understand the difference. They think that's one and the same, that you can't come off one.
Yeah.
Or that's what I hear patients say is, you know, well, once I go on palliative care, then that's it. I'm done for.
Yeah.
No, you can come off. Right. And you can come off of it. You can get better.
Yeah.
We have patients that graduate from hospice.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean.
So that's a big myth, I think.
Yeah. One thing to even think about is, I mean, I've even in previous and where I've worked and whatnot is that everybody with a new cancer diagnosis would have a palliative consult. And it doesn't necessarily mean that. I mean, you obviously can be cured of cancer,
but
it's still not a bad idea to have that, those get that relationships and start that and just get some information.
Well, in the team, you know, if you have a diagnosis like that, the way I think of it as well as a provider is that I need that emotional support.
Exactly.
I need that spiritual support.
Mm-hmm.
I need that team with me to help support me. And that's the way I think of palliative care. And that's how I explain it to patients is that you need a team that's rooting for you, that's on your side, that's going to help you be comfortable.
Yeah.
To make you, I mean, you're going to get better.
And with
mentally, at least.
With our company, we have a very close relationship with our palliative care service. I mean, I know the nurse practitioner extremely well. I actually helped train her. And so we are in
Who is it?
Keelan Bowles.
I know Keelan.
She
was our graduate.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we are in constant communication about patients and going back and forth. And you know, that's one thing, too, is that you don't have to decide palliative care or hospice. Like, if for example, a patient wants information, like, we do all the lifting of that. It's like, you give us, you come to us, and we help out, and we decide which way to go.
Right. That's the support, support that people do not realize. So that's wonderful that we're telling.
Well, along those lines, that kind of goes to my next question.
Yes, ma'am.
So can you tell us what kinds of support can you provide to patients and families? So what can they get through hospice?
Through hospice, they can get the social worker, the chaplain, the nurse, the aide, the volunteers, and they can get community resources.
Mm. Okay.
We hook them up with whatever resources are available in the community that they might need.
Okay. And that, I'm assuming, could change as their status changes?
Absolutely.
As what resources they may need, because at the beginning they may not need as many. Mm-hmm. Later on, you might need more resources. So that's good to know what type of resources are available also.
Yep, exactly right. Like oftentimes the nursing case manager, you may see your nursing case manager weekly, but then if you need something else, it can be increased in frequency. And we always have a nurse on call as well.
Okay.
24/7 available call for questions, or if there is a visit that is needed, any type of urgent need, they're available to drive out and help as well. So.
Which counties do you serve? Are there specific?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We have a certificate of need, and that is for Putnam, Overton, Cumberland, White, DeKalb, Pickett, Fentress. I think I got them all.
Okay. So at least half.
Most of the Upper Cumberland.
Upper Cumberland counties.
Yeah.
And we did just have a certificate of need for Putnam County for a couple of years. And then we had to go and get that certificate of need broadened to cover the entire Upper Cumberland so that we could up the residents in all those counties.
Absolutely, okay. Yeah.
And then the nurses that you have, do you have people that are kind of spread out in the Upper Cumberland
They're
area?
Geographically. Okay. Put in a caseload. Usually the case managers have about 12 patients. It's usually about 1 to 12.
Okay.
And so it'll be a nurse and an aide. That'll be this patient's team. Okay. We try to keep continuity. Of course, there's always someone might call in or something, but we try to keep the continuity so that the nurse knows what the patient looked like. When their condition warrants, you know, they might be being seen two times a week. When their condition warrants, as those worsen, you know, that patient would become a daily visit for the nurse.
Okay.
Done. So some families wait a little bit long to seek hospice care. I heard you guys saying that you'd wished you had interacted with these families and these patients sooner. So why do you think that is? You know, or what can we say to families who might feel hesitant? Dr. Gilbert, I think you had some thoughts on that.
Yeah, so thank you. I think that a lot of times patients and families may feel that going into hospice basically means you have no, like there's no more hope or basically that, okay, I can't take any of my medications or I just, that's it. Like it basically, you're done. But honestly, it's more about, like I mentioned earlier, that it's shifting the focus more from curative treatment to maintaining dignity, quality of life, and comfort. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, oftentimes we do get patients where we're only brought in hospice in the couple days or in the final days. And sometimes patients may think, or in families, that that's all that hospice is. Like, okay, you know, I guess my family member's getting extremely sick. We probably get hospice for a couple of days and then we're good. But in reality, the sooner that we're able to touch that patient, the sooner we're able to get in there and help and provide all of our services. It's better all around for everybody. And then another thing too is that one thing I would encourage families who may feel hesitant is we offer free consultations, like free informational visits. I know Tracy and Sean, our community liaisons, are incredible, and I know that they'll talk to you on the phone if you have questions. Doesn't require a physician's or a doctor's order. You can call our office, get information, get pamphlets, understand what we do. There's no obligation. There's nothing for these kind of free informational visits. We just want to make sure that patients and families know their options and know what we can or cannot do.
So. And what phone number is it again, Tracy?
931-651-2721.
Okay.
And then just last thing is that the earlier that we are able to start caring for the patient and earlier support really just means fewer emergencies, better comfort, and then really more time for what matters, which is family.
So. It is. It is. That's when it comes down to it, they always say it's your family. That means the most to you, right? Spend that time.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about some myths already. We talked about two or three myths that were, you know, you've heard commonly. Are there misunderstandings, which is a little bit different than myths? Do you think there's misunderstandings that you hear about hospice or end-of-life care?
And I've spoken about this one as well, but one big one that I've heard is that we stop all your medicines, which is absolutely false. Okay. Now, we may have a decision or we may have a conversation if certain medications, you know, could have potential side effects, or maybe they were geared toward a disease that we were attempting to cure. But mostly we will maintain most home medications and could potentially have a discussion about some pulling back if that's appropriate. Another one is that insurance doesn't cover hospice.
Yeah.
Obviously Medicare has a hospice benefit and Trace will be able to speak better than me, but private plans.
Commercial plans.
Yeah, okay. Private commercial plans cover hospice as well.
Yeah.
And then another one too that we touched on is that under no means can you go to the hospital. We prefer to, obviously the patient, families, and us prefer to give care to the patient in their home. But, many times, oftentimes the patient may need to go to the ER or they may fall and, you know, things like that. And that's something that we're happy to assist with. And then as we mentioned earlier, if a symptom is becoming uncontrolled, whether that's pain most likely or most common, that we are able to follow that patient in the hospital, well, Cookeville Regional Hospital right now, mm-hmm. or Cookeville Regional Medical Center. But yeah.
Okay.
That's GIP. That's a different level of care than routine home care.
Yes.
Okay.
For unmanaged symptoms.
Yeah, for unmanaged
and
symptoms.
And typically in the home setting, they could reach out to their case manager, their nurse, and they facilitate. This is probably what I would suggest that you do at this time.
Yeah, yes. The nurse will go out and make an assessment, call yes. Dr. Gilbert.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They'll have a conversation with the family and decide what's best.
Okay, good.
So everybody's involved.
Yes.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. So you've mentioned already that hospice really focuses on quality of life. So can you explain how that approach impacts the patients and how it impacts their loved ones?
Sure, yes. So how I view it is when symptoms are controlled, attention can shift more to your family, more to your relationships, and not so much toward what medicine do I need to take next, or I've got this doctor's appointment that I have to go to this day. It seems like families often report also they're able to relax more and focus on what's actually important.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing too is that we've heard that families report fewer late night emergencies. Families have more confidence in actually the caregiving and giving medications when needed. And there's this more meaningful time together. And how I think of it too is quality of life also means the supporting emotional and spiritual needs, mm-hmm. and then honoring traditions as well. And then also planning for the future with more clarity versus potentially not having that clarity. So,
yeah. So quality of life is important, and you've touched on that. And we've talked mostly about the patient and talked about how important family is. And obviously family is a big part of this process. So are there resources that families can benefit from with hospice for the patient?
Yes, we have bereavement services where we follow the family for 13 months after a patient passes away.
Okay.
So we're there with them through the first Christmas, the first birthday, the first Thanksgiving, all the first, to try to give them an extra layer of support.
Yeah.
You know, people, when you're planning to have a child, you've got 9 months to prepare for that. Everybody's excited, everyone's involved, and we've got 9 months. When you are facing a life-limiting disease, we don't prepare because we don't want it to come.
Right.
Good
and
point.
It doesn't stop it from coming, unfortunately.
Very true.
Yep.
Yep, that's a good point.
You want to speak about respite as well, or like...
We do provide respite care. Families can be overwhelmed. So once every cert period, they can get 5 days, whether it's they need to go out of town for a wedding or it's just caregiver exhaustion.
Because that is a real thing.
It is.
Caregiver strain is a real thing.
And then also I want to mention, too, that our support doesn't end with a patient passing. You know, we have chaplain service and social work service, and we remain in contact. You know, I don't think we have a certain specified even time. It's just whatever is needed,
mm-hmm.
that our chaplain and social work and everybody and even nursing staff, where we don't just, you know, leave.
So continuity goes on
beyond.
Yes,
it continues on with family.
Yeah. That's wonderful. So switching topics just a little bit, just thinking of in the last several minutes that we have left to talk about it was just practical advice for listeners in the community. So for families listening, what should they keep in mind if they have a loved one with a serious illness? And we've talked about some of those who may need hospice. Maybe they need palliative support. What do they need to know? What do they need to do?
They need to know that they can call for a free informational, no obligation visit for education.
Okay.
I would encourage them, if they have a life-limiting disease, like 2 years or less type mm-hmm. situation, go ahead and get established with a palliative care provider. We are not taking the place of the primary care doctor.
Okay.
We require them on palliative care to have a PCP because that is who drives the bus. That's who drives the care. So we're not taking anybody's place. Palliative care is a specialty Just like cardiology or nephrology, palliative care medicine is a specialty. And so the earlier you get the people on board to manage symptoms, the better outcomes you're going to have with your disease, whether that is progressive or not.
Right.
I know you mentioned kind of what should they keep in mind from kind of more of like a medical perspective. I would just say families should pay attention to patterns. You know, with a patient, I mean, more falls, more trips to the hospital, more hospitalizations, more emergency room visits, worsening weight loss, harder to control symptoms, nausea, you know, pain, that sort of thing would all be signals, how I view it, to start thinking and to potentially get looped in with palliative care or looped in with hospice. I guess those are the big ones. And then like we've mentioned them several times, informational visits, we're happy to do those, and there's no obligation, no cost at all. So
changes in a loved one is what I hear you saying.
Yes.
The big changes that are taking time and taking that chronic illness a step further.
Progression.
Okay. Or multiple little changes.
I like it. Okay. Because that is, it's so subtle sometimes when you're taking care of someone and you're there with them all the time. I know that was way, it was my mom. Mm-hmm. You just don't realize.
Yeah. You don't notice that they're going from sleeping 14 hours
exactly.
a day to 20.
Or yeah. not eating.
Or not eating.
Losing weight.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's
yeah,
perfect.
When you're
yeah.
the one taking care of them
mm-hmm.
every day.
Mm-hmm. Good. That was the changes. I like that too.
Any advice that you, either of you have for people to have, begin having these conversations? These are difficult conversations to have. You mentioned that, you know, you plan for this baby, but we don't plan as well for death because people don't want it to happen. Right. So these are difficult conversations to have with your family members. Is there any advice that you would give to listeners about starting that conversation?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing would just be begin with values, with what matters most to that family member, to that person. If health worsens, what are our priorities? What is our next step? What are we going to do next? Talk about what family member is going to be there to assist you, or who you would want to have input, or who is going to, you know, potentially even make those decisions for you as your power of attorney, POA.
Yeah.
You know, write things
Huge.
Down. Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah. Write things down. Advance directives. You know, share copies with your family. Share copies with everybody. And then I just like to always give the advice that smaller, earlier conversations are always bigger, are always better than bigger, very late conversations.
Yeah. So, very good point.
It is. Well, Tracy and Dr. Gilbert, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your expertise, both of you. We highlight the importance of hospice and palliative care. We encourage our listeners to learn more and have these important conversations with their families. And remember that compassionate support is available right here in our community.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.